Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Well, Rich, I'm not quite sure where to begin, but I think for a lot of people listening, they got introduced to the Woken Matt Hardy universe for the first time. I think for probably most of our listeners, they watched the TNA version from a while back. It's the match that ended Raw, which in and of itself is noteworthy. I want to throw to you and get your initial thoughts on what we saw with Matt and Bray on the Hardy compound tonight.
Yeah, I thought it was crazy. I thought it was over the top, but I thought with it being 9 minutes, it was enough time to give you a taste of the universe without it being the WWE universe may not be ready, quote unquote, for the 27 minute or over the course of a 2 hour or 3 hour in the case of Raw situation like they did in Impact toward the end. So I think this was a good introduction, and I'm hopeful that Bray Wyatt either stays away or gets repackaged after this, now that he's entered the Lake of Reincarnation, but who knows?
So, yeah, I agree with you. I think 9 minutes is a good amount of time to visit the Ultimate Deletion and Matt Hardy compound and the Woken Matt universe. I thought they did a nice job with it. I really did. I think that the WWE did not strip away the spirit or weirdness of this universe that Matt and company have created. I thought that Vanguard 1 was well utilized, and the on-screen graphics were, and Senior Benjamin was well utilized, Jeff Hardy with his little cameo. I thought it was a good representation of what a lot of people love and some people don't love about this. Is going back to the initial skits and the whole creation of this universe, on Impact it was sort of like, what have we got to lose? You know, let's create a buzz, let's get attention. Didn't make a permanent dent in ratings, but it had its moments in terms of drawing viewership. How do you think the, if you'll excuse the expression, the WWE universe is going to react to this with the editing and the music and the over-the-top cheesiness of certain aspects of it? Have they been introduced enough to the concept, or if not, maybe it's fine that they weren't. It's better that they weren't. How do you think WWE will react to this, the typical viewer who's used to something very different and, frankly, not a lot of experimentation when it comes to how WWE presents its product?
I think this was the best person that Matt could have done this with, because of the fact that they have been used to the insanity of Bray Wyatt long form non-match matches, particularly the abominations with Randy Orton on SmackDown. So I think that allowed it. And to be honest, I think Matt Hardy did more for Bray Wyatt by bringing him into the universe than Bray Wyatt did being in the universe, if that made sense.
It does. No, I think that's a good point. We are live on the air here on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, March 19th, 2018. This is our first show of the week. Tomorrow, we will be by with a post-SmackDown show within minutes of SmackDown going off the air. We'll be live here if you want to stream our show live and hear what we're saying as we're recording right after SmackDown ends. You go to WadeKellerPodcast.com, and there should be a link to stream the show. You can also call us and listen in or participate, 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And if you want to participate on the show, you have to push 1 on your keypad, and that will move you into the queue that says, I want to be on the show. It's like raising your hand, and we'll try to make time to get you onto the program. So you can begin doing that now if you have already called into the show and you are on hold. And if you are streaming and haven't called in yet, 347-215-8558. You can talk about anything about tonight's Raw, and we welcome you joining our conversation, including your thoughts on the Woken Matt Universe, the pin of Bray Wyatt, and what you feel about the finish that my co-host on today's program, Rich Fan, just mentioned, that maybe Bray Wyatt will now come out of the Lake of Reincarnation with a new character or a new lease on his existing character, a refresh of it. So I am intrigued, Rich. And I think there's some potential here for something that will culminate at WrestleMania in a good way. Rich, who I reference, is Rich Fan, the host of the PW Torch Livecast Saturday edition, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. He also joins Travis Bryant on the VIP version of the East Coast Cast every Wednesday night. So you can hear him twice a week as a VIP member, but you can listen to him every Saturday or on demand anytime over at the PW Torch Livecast. You can find those shows at pwtorchlivecast.com and also just subscribe to the 7 days a week free PW Torch Livecast by searching PW Torch on Apple Podcasts or any podcast app that you use to listen to podcasts. Rich, thanks for joining me again today.
Oh, always happy to do it. And I would add one because I feel like, especially since he's going to give me a hard time if I don't, I do make frequent appearances on Redick and Worldwide when Todd Martin is not available.
I still, that was one of my favorite cringeworthy moments of VIP audio in recent memory is that Sean talking about you and Todd and when you were on and then Todd was on and then you were on. Yeah. Anyway, you have to listen.
Oh, he followed up this morning with a text and said that for weekend, same thing happened. And I called him out on Twitter and then Alan Forel, newest member to the Torch family, said, well, don't worry, you'll be appearing with me on the New Japan Roundtable with Sean. And I was like, well, fine. I guess if I have to be second banana, I can be second banana and on with Alan Forel.
I think Sean is just a little worried about overworking you, you know, taking advantage of you. So. All right. Well, anyway, let's get back to Raw. I want to bring up one other topic with you. We've got a lot we could choose from as topic number two, and then we'll get to some phone calls. By the way, I do want to note so I don't forget, if you are listening live and you don't want to participate in a call for any reason, but you want to email us your thoughts, the email address is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Coming up in a bit, we should have our on-site correspondent from Dallas to talk about what it was like to be in the building. I'm particularly interested in hearing how the crowd reacted to the Hardy video at the end against Bray Wyatt. Also, Ronda Rousey, we were told that Ronda Rousey would be appearing in Dallas at Raw for the live crowd because they were told she would be there, and many people bought tickets on that premise. Last week, they were left out. They did not get either Brock Lesnar or Ronda Rousey, who were heavily advertised, and our on-site correspondent was not happy about that, and many others emailed and weren't. This week, I'm curious if Ronda did show up in front of the fans, even if it was off-camera. We got a Ronda Rousey video. And, Rich, that's what I wanted to ask you about. What did you think of the job that they did introducing? And we talk about the broken universe being introduced to the WWE audience full-scale, two teaser. I think it was just two teaser skits, right? And then the main one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We got Ronda Rousey, essentially, in a very different tone, a very sports-like tone, not the absurd over-the-top tone, introduced to, I think, a lot of WWE viewers. I know pro wrestling fans who know of Ronda Rousey, but have never watched her fight. They don't really know her personality. They couldn't really tell you much about her story other than she was a really good fighter, and then she lost once or twice, and now they don't really know what happened to her. And that is the totality of what they know about her. They know her name. They know what she looks like. But they don't really know a lot about her. Did this video package do a good job in introducing to fans who did not know her who she is? And perhaps as important, did they frame what has been an image of her being a petulant sore loser and a baby about losing? She was a really good winner. And when she lost a couple times, didn't want to talk to the media, stormed off, disappeared, took her ball and went home, didn't handle losing well. Part of not losing well is, you know, it's the thrill of victory and the agony of a defeat. If she didn't take losses hard, she probably wouldn't have worked so hard to be great when she was winning. And I get that sometimes comes with the territory. I thought this video put her in some sympathetic light. How do you think they did with this, Rich?
I think this is something they need to re-examine and use more with people they see as top talent, because not only was it a combination of the sit-down, which they've been very successful with over the years, but having the footage and then juxtaposing it with her very limited wrestling appearances did a good job, in my opinion, of selling her as being, pardon the pun, all in on wrestling. And she sold it from a storyline perspective of, I didn't know it was my dream until I saw I could do it, which gave, for the wrestling fan who maybe isn't a UFC fan, the idea that, oh, wow, she was into that UFC thing, but she didn't realize she could actually wrestle. And while that might be a little far-fetched for everyone who kind of knew all the angles, I think it's enough to get you in there and see her as, and we'll talk about someone else a little later that they tried to do the same thing with. It's easy to root for her given that video and not maybe focus on some of that sore loser the reality would bring to the table.
I think that's really well put. And it humanized her, and it also gave fans a story to believe in. And, you know, some people are rolling their eyes a little bit. Oh, you know, USC was just a stop on the way to WrestleMania. You know, that's kind of how they portrayed it, that, you know, this is my destiny. This is where I want to be, where I always wanted to be. I get that. But, you know, that some people might roll their eyes at that and go, well, no, had she kept winning at USC, she'd certainly still be there. And this is just kind of the next chapter, but not really all roads led to it. I think it's fine for WWE to tell their audience that WrestleMania is the ultimate place to be. And I think they ought to do so. And I think they did so in a credible enough way to give their fans a reason to be proud and excited by the idea that Ronda Rousey's ultimate goal and landing place in life is here and that she loves it. And I thought, you know, there was just that image. There was multiple images that stand out. I love Kurt Angle in the background looking at her admiringly and respectfully as she talked. I liked there was one point where they almost did kind of the slow motion video of her smiling and in just elation as she was talking about some fond memories and or coming to WWE. I can't remember the context. And I love the line that where she said, some people thought I was a bitch, but people need to get used to a woman who's confident. And I was the best in the world and I was confident. And I like that she stood up for herself against some of the image that she didn't play the aw shucks, flirtatious female athlete role that some people want. But she did so in a way that didn't seem like Roman Reigns telling police how to do their jobs. It came across, we'll get to that. It came across as, hey, I like that, you know, it's WWE celebrating women and the Women's Evolution and Women's History Month. And I thought Ronda stood up for herself well and defended her demeanor well, Rich.
Yeah, I agree completely, Wade. I think with her, I saw it as, and she even had a line, I wanted to write it down, but it was so fast I didn't get a chance to, where she said, you know, I could have some fun, break a couple of arms, and just, you know, enjoy my life. The fact that she's being she's showing the athletic arrogance she showed in UFC is a better look for her than the, I'm just glad the WWE found me on the side of the road and brought me into their wonderful world.
Yes, absolutely. Well put. All right. So let's open up the phone lines here, and we will begin with area code 803. 803, you're first up today. Thanks for calling. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, this is Joseph from South Carolina.
Hey, Joseph, thanks for calling.
At Columbia, by the way.
Oh, good.
Yes, sir.
Yep.
I really like Ultimate Deletion tonight. I thought they did a much better job than I thought they would with it. But about the John Cena promo, considering it's so close to WrestleMania, do you guys think Kane is just a shoe-in for 1 week of Raw? Or are they actually going to have him go up against him at Mania? Just want to know what you guys thought on that whole situation. Thank you.
Oh, sure. Thanks, Joseph. I'm glad Joseph called, Rich, and that's why we have callers. It wouldn't have even crossed my mind that anybody would watch that. And this isn't a dig at Joseph. It's more a dig at me. Watch that and think, oh, maybe it's going to be Cena versus Kane instead of Cena Undertaker. Like, that didn't even cross my mind. But I actually could imagine some fans watching that thinking, this isn't just an extension of waiting for Undertaker to answer the call, you know, to fill some time till they get there. But maybe Kane is going to answer the challenge on behalf of Taker, and they're going to save Taker for later, or Taker's really retired. Rich, your thought on that?
Well, it reminded me of a couple of years ago when Cena came back from injury, and Kane was the interstitial feud he had before he had his WrestleMania feud of that year, where he was trying to bring the evil out of John Cena. I think that was probably, I want to guess, it's like 3 years ago, 4 years ago, maybe more. So they're really just microwaving a feud. So I just see it, and they even announced it later in the show, which is very good. They're trying to avoid a lot of the fly by the seat of your pants. Like, their match is set. Kurt doesn't look like a complete imbecile in his job. He knew what he was doing when he showed up Monday morning for Monday evening. So having them in that match next week, I think, only builds to the, did Kane show up as part of revenge for his brother? Was he just defending his brother's honor when someone besmirched him like he's done in the past because he did that with Roman Reigns just a scant 5 months ago? Or was this Glenn Jacobs for mayor? Oh, in addition to the rubber chicken meals, I'm going to wrestle and vote for me.
Very good. What, Rich, what did you think of John Cena's overall promo? And for those who didn't see the show, and I know some of you tune into this and listen and maybe haven't watched the show before you listen, Cena was hard on Undertaker and said that he's been in hiding and ashamed and he shouldn't be ashamed, but he should of what's happened in his career. He said he's a god, he's Undertaker, but he should be ashamed, I guess, of not answering his challenge. And he said, I don't care if you say yes or no, just say anything. And the crowd started chanting, say anything. So I thought for a while they were against Cena and thought Cena was being a little harsh on Taker. And then I thought that the crowd kind of went with, yeah, but we would like to hear from you. How did you interpret John Cena's tone and how the crowd reacted to his tone? Do you like this approach from Cena on his promos?
I do, because this is a desperate man, and I know how silly it is that it's John Cena looking for a WrestleMania match, but it's showing how far he's willing to take this, that he's really, you know, in terms of storyline, he's really messing with his own legacy to get The Undertaker into this ring. And I had mentioned on Twitter last week to you, I loved, you know, when I first got back into WWE when I was in college and I was watching the Orlando Jordan, John Cena, Undertaker, like three-way feud. I thought he would refer to that, or some point maybe he will, because The Undertaker was really important to him early on in his career, more so than that quick angle match. I think having him get desperate enough to say, hey, you, a long time ago, you helped me, and now I'm going to help you finish your career like a man, might be the exclamation point that kind of forces Undertaker to make a decision.
All right, let's go to another call, and we'll go to area code 972 next. 972, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, this is Russ. I'm actually from Dallas. I was at the show tonight.
Oh, great. Thanks, Russ. We're going to do our on-site conversation later on with a planned out correspondent, but we certainly will take a question or comment from you otherwise.
No, I just, you know, I don't want to spoil too much, but the main thing was kind of a bummer was they actually didn't show the Ultimate Deletion in the arena tonight.
Really?
So I'd love to get your thoughts on. They brought out a couple of special little treats, which was nice, but they did not show the Ultimate Deletion in the arena, which was kind of a bummer.
So what happened when that was playing?
So they brought out Ronda, and Ronda did a quick little Hey Dallas, and then Dana came out. Ronda threw Dana around a little bit. And then Elias came out, played a little guitar, got destroyed by Braun in a pretty quick match, and then Kane came out and got thrown through a table by Braun.
Wow, interesting. I wonder why they chose that route.
I'm not sure. I mean, I know that they got some negative feedback from the 25th anniversary show. You know, obviously with having, you know, Steph broadcasted into the arena, but I would have thought they would have shown that in the arena tonight. So that was kind of a bummer. But overall, really great show, really great energy. So.
What was the highlight for you?
Highlight for me, honestly, Brock Lesnar. I mean, that was awesome. You know, the energy for that was really good. Everybody was pumped every single time he came back. And, that was probably the big highlight of the night for sure.
Cool. Well, Russ, I appreciate it, Russ. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely. All right, our number, 347-215-8558. Push 1 on your touchscreen if you are interested in being on the show. Up next, it looks like a Skype or international call. If you heard a beep, that is you. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
This is Craig from Toledo.
Hey, Craig. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight?
I would actually like to know if that guy that just called right there was, like, could knew if the people around him wanted to see the would have rather seen the Ultimate Deletion, and if you guys could ask the guy, your correspondent, that question, that'd be great.
Oh, we for sure will. Yeah,
like they would have rather seen the deletion on the instead of Ronda and all the stuff that happened after, you know, as opposed to the stuff we got.
Yeah, how would you have felt in the building? Would you have rather seen if it was a, not that it's a false choice, because they could have shown Ultimate Deletion and still had Ronda come out everything else that they did. Would you have felt bad about it, especially if you weren't recording it on DVR at home, considering that it was hyped throughout the show?
I mean, I absolutely would have wanted to see. I was at the Detroit show last week, and I didn't get Ronda or Brock or any of that stuff, and I thought it was a great show, but I wanted the Ultimate Deletion tonight. To me, was like, it made me so happy. But I've gone to a lot of events in the last a lot of WWE NXT events in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And a lot of people seem to know more than me at those events, let alone more than traditional, like what they call marks, you know. And the biggest pop in the last, since the Stone Cold one a while ago, has been when the Hardys came out because of the whole Broken Universe. So I'm wondering if we're underestimating the WWE universe on the whole. Like, I know WWE universe, yeah. But like, if we're underestimating like the WWE viewers or, you know, everything on the whole, as far as like they might be really into this.
Well, I think that the people who attend events, especially televised events that are not on school nights, but even house shows, I mean, a lot of those fans are going to know who the Hardys are in their alternate personas in the Ultimate Deletion and everything there. But there's a lot of there's, you know, millions of TV viewers, many of whom we know statistically 90% of them don't watch Impact. I mean, you know, give or take, it's about 90% who don't watch Impact who watch Raw. So those, I mean, and there's a lot of people who watched online, but not enough to make up for everybody watching Raw. So there are a lot of people who are really into it, know a ton, and then there's a lot of people who attend WWE because it's a casual, fun thing that they do, but they don't broaden their horizons beyond that, and that's what I'm curious about. I mean, right now the number one trend on Twitter in the United States of America is Ultimate Deletion, hashtag Ultimate Deletion. So it's getting a buzz, and I think that's going to impress Vince McMahon. Craig, appreciate the call. Rich, do you think? I mean, it's a total guess, but how do you think Vince felt about what he watched? Do you think he probably watched it earlier? I hope he did. I'm sure he did. So maybe he was paying attention to Ronda coming out to the crowd in Dallas. But what's your take watching Vince for all these years and trying to figure him out? What do you think he thought of this?
I think he enjoyed it because I think he likes quirky.
Yeah.
And I think you could kind of see some of the changes. Like, he is a big, for all we talk about his sophomore humor, when it comes to vision and seeing things, he went with more of an overhead shot than, say, even TNA did when they were doing the Final Deletion. It was a lot of the establishing shot, and then you'd see the Hardy compound, you'd see the wonderful landscaping, and then you'd kind of zoom in, whereas they went in reverse here, and they were very deliberate about giving you the location of where you were in relation to where you are. And that was something that's one of those things that maybe, you know, for all our complaints about Vince missing details when it comes to something he's really interested in, he's all in, all, you know, a whole hog, as my grandmother would have said. And that's how it looked to me. It looked like they paid, and that's what was most rewarding to me about seeing it. They paid attention to it. It wasn't just a throwaway, to the point where he took one of his own creations and allowed it to, quote unquote, not necessarily die, but lose. Because there's so many times we would have been to a point where Bray hits that Sister Abigail's kiss, throws Matt onto the boat and gives him a Viking funeral, and he's laughing maniacally as Raw ends.
Good, very good point. Let's take another call or two, and then we'll get to our on-site correspondent of the next segment. 585, you're up next. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hi, Wade. This is David Miller from Canandaigua, New York. How are you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind today?
Well, for one thing, I may be in the minority, but I thought the Ultimate Deletion match was actually pretty ridiculous. It kind of reminded me of the old WCW mini movies that they used to shoot with Steaming Bulldog versus Vader and Sid. But
White Castle of Fear.
Also, Also, I just wanted to say real quick, I don't know about you, but I thought Roman Reigns came across as a total dick again tonight. He's no Stone Cold Steve Austin. When Austin used to get the cuffs put on him, the fans were cheering. He came out there, he ran his mouth to Kurt Angle, and then he got cuffed, and he was hitting the police, and then Brock came out, and you know, you even heard the little, you know, chant of "you deserve it" there at the end. So I kind of want your thoughts on that.
Great question. We haven't touched on that yet, Rich, other than my allusion to it earlier. Do you agree with David's assessment? He put it bluntly that Reigns did not come across as particularly likable in that segment, including what jumped out to me is just starting to order the cops around. You know, like you're the one who Kurt Angle, a babyface, the commissioner, the person in charge of the show, has said is trespassing. And now Roman is telling the cops exactly how to treat him, stay away from him, and all that stuff. And, like, there's a way to not be happy with the situation, but also be likable or respectful. And I thought it was another one of those kind of tone-deaf moments that made me think, as I talked about this weekend for VIP members, I think Roman Reigns has potentially been one of the biggest drawing heels ever, and I just don't know if we're ever going to get to see it.
I think we are seeing it, and they just don't realize it. It's funny to me because last week in my head, and I mentioned this to Bruce, and then even this morning when I got up and saw the god-awful Instagram post, I felt like Johnny Bravo did a magnificent job of making Roman a bigger face than he could be on his own in terms of the quote-unquote journalist that claims he has this documentary that says Roman used his clients' drugs and all this other stuff. He's like, okay, just leave the guy alone. Either you have evidence or you don't.
Yeah.
Then you fast forward to Raw, and as much as our caller had a point about the final deletion being too over the top and too silly compared to the old WCW days, I would argue that the beginning of Raw was the most ridiculous thing I've seen in years because Roman Reigns, first of all, it wasn't enough, and that's where events went a step too far. Just like with in the awesome PW Torch VIP article that Bruce put up last week, it wasn't enough for him to say that the cops were on him. They had to go a step. It's the U.S. Marshals. What is he, a top 10 most wanted criminal? Did he join Al-Qaeda in some point? Yeah. Is he with Muhammad Hassan? And so now you're telling U.S. Marshals, not just cops, what to do. Then you assault two of them.
And they weren't mishandling him.
No.
You know, like they weren't roughing him up and going past a line. They were probably literally doing what cops do when they put someone in a car. They push their head down so they don't hit their head and sue them or get cut. And
right.
And so they're two cops, for people who didn't see it, are trying to lead him through the ropes. He's in handcuffs so he doesn't fall. And, you know, they're like, I don't care if you want us to touch you or not. Our job is to make sure that you don't fall flat on your face leaving the ring because we put handcuffs on you. And he elbowed each of them and attacked them. So, yeah, go ahead, Rich.
And then, you know, from a little weird nerd standpoint on my end, most police officers, that's the reason they put it behind your back so you can't actually do what he did to them.
So, yeah. Yes.
So he does that, and then Michael Cole spends the next 7 minutes as Brock Lesnar beats the tar out of him, explaining that the U.S. Marshals were cowards for leaving the area after he hit them without getting tased or shot. And how dare Brock Lesnar, you know, in my opinion, as some people on Twitter said, provide a citizen's arrest for an unruly fan who jumped the barrier.
And it's just a hunch, but I kind of have a hunch where Vince McMahon's politics are, where his initial tendency is on who to believe and when it comes to cops and controversy surrounding their treatment, especially of blacks. And I was kind of surprised that Vince let this go on the air, you know, like with the cops as sort of the bad guys. I mean, that's assuming that's where this is going, and it is the safest of assumptions. It is probably the obvious assumption. Yet with the crowd reaction and what we're watching and what David said, I think there's things that Vince isn't seeing that everybody else is seeing when it comes to how this is being done. This comes across as shoving Roman Reigns down our throats. And I don't like that phrase. I think it's overdone. This was one of those weeks where it felt like that, where it's like, you will cheer Roman Reigns, damn it. And it's like, it's too much. And Roman's not helping his cause once again this week. All right, we can talk more about it as the show goes on. Let's grab another call here. More and more people are calling. We might not get to everybody, but hold tight, and we'll get to as many of you as we can, but we got to get to our on-site correspondent before it gets too late. Also, 434, you are up next. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, guys. It's Johnny Fairplay. What's going on?
Hey, Johnny. What's up?
Johnny, what's going on?
I'm thinking Vince did not like the Ultimate Deletion because the lead-in from Michael Cole, and Michael Cole is usually the voice of Vince.
Yep.
Michael Cole said, you know, this is obnoxious, and we apologize for what you're about to see.
Now, I wonder, because I've been critical. Here's the devil's advocate view of that, and I think it's a legit point of view, Johnny. Did Vince do that because somebody told Vince, you're going to kill this? You're going to absolutely kill it if Michael Cole introduces it as something cool. So if you have Michael Cole, who does a nice job with announcing, especially given his circumstances, doing all the corporate speak and all that, but he's not the coolest guy. He's not the guy who's a trendsetter. Yeah. So having Cole apologize ahead of time, I actually think is a pretty good strategy. Now, Rich, I want your opinion on this. Do you think Vince was kind of playing reverse psychology on us there by having Cole apologize so that the people who would like this might like it more because it felt like it was anti-establishment?
Well, on one hand, you had Michael saying this was like apologizing, and then you had on the other side Corey Graves jumping right in his face about it, saying this is the final deletion, this is the final battle, this is the greatest battle ever. So I think he wanted to have his cake and eat it too. I think, to Johnny's point, that there he did feel this is ridiculous. I don't, because it isn't his, he really wants to distance himself from, okay, I get this is crazy, folks. But at the same time, he does get in. I personally feel like he gets enjoyment from it as well. So that way he can say, okay, look at this creation I had. We may have lifted it from TNA, but we took their craziness and we made it entertainment.
Johnny, anything else for us?
No. I thought it was great. I was hanging out with Jeff Hardy the night after they filmed it. And he said they had a film crew of like 45 people. They brought in Borash just so they could get that original feel to it. And Jeff was super happy with what they did and thought it was the craziest thing they've done yet. And I thought it was great. I mean, it's a breath of fresh air, something different. I mean, you know, we see the same thing every week, and it's nice to see something different. You know, good, bad, or indifferent. Something new is good.
The number's been going down as I've been hitting refresh on our Twitter poll. Follow us on Twitter at PWTorch, by the way. But I put up a poll, Ultimate Deletion. What did you think? Awesome, good, just okay, or thumbs down? You only get four choices on Twitter and their polls. 57% called it awesome, 19% good. So it's got a 76% thumbs up, 12% said just okay, only 12% thumbs down. I would think PWTorch followers on Twitter are probably more likely than average to like it, I think. But I might be wrong. You know, David called up. He's a longtime fan, remembers the mini movies. It wasn't his thing. He gave it a thumbs down. But Johnny, so far, I mean, it seems like there's some enthusiasm for this. And I'm curious if people who were fans of the original in TNA will have criticism of this version of it. Johnny, I'll ask you before we let you go. Final topic. Was there anything about this that disappointed you, or you felt like the original version was better, or they had more creative freedom that they didn't have in WWE?
No, I like... There was a little part of me like worried that it was going to be a little too much Bray Wyatt, but then when you know they do like the old, you know, like Benny Hill run around, you know, chase thing, and then Matt's looking at the old wheelchair and the lawnmower, I was like, okay, this is great. So now I'm happy. I think if you were a fan of the stuff from TNA, you should be equally as happy.
All right, cool, Johnny. Appreciate the run-in.
Thank you.
You're always welcome. All right. All right. So Johnny doesn't really count as a caller. So we'll take another call here. he is a caller technically, but he's like part of the co-host rotation. So let's go to 903. 903, thanks for calling. Please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Yeah, this is Ben Holcomb, actually, from Dallas.
Hey, Ben. How you doing? Awesome.
Pretty good.
This is your life, Wade Keller, or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't done one of those in a while, but no, I was at the show and I'm actually upset that I have found more out about Ultimate Deletion listening to you guys than actually at the show. They showed us no promos, nothing.
Wow. Oh, wow.
It was kind of disappointing.
I wonder if
we
Vince
got Ronda
felt
Rousey
it was
segment, but we didn't get this.
I wonder if Vince felt it was inappropriate for the live audience for some reason to see it, or, you know, if it wasn't about video content versus live in-person content, but just for some reason he felt it was inappropriate for the live audience. I can't think of anything that would be okay for USA Network, but not the paying fans. So that's an interesting choice. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was, you know, I came into it realizing, hey, they're going to show this on video screen, you know, sit down, maybe go grab a drink or something, you know, and they didn't do that. You know, Elias came out, and then Braun Strowman came out and they did a match with that. And then Kane came out and it was like, okay, time is up. So, you know, I start checking the web pages and I'm like, okay, they didn't even air Ronda Rousey for the fans at home and we're not getting Ultimate Deletion. This is weird.
What was most remarkable aspect of being in attendance tonight? What will you remember? What stood out? What's newsworthy?
Well, the fact that I got such good seats. I've never been on the floor seats before.
Oh, cool.
But, yeah, no, it was pretty awesome. And to be honest with you, I think the most awesome thing was the dark main event. Once Kane came out, him and Braun Strowman, you're on my Facebook. You can probably – I put videos of just – they tore it down. It was amazing.
That's good.
The show overall, you know, I haven't watched Raw in a while because I can't sit through 3 hours of watching it on TV. But this show was really, really good, you know, match-wise. You know, for the live audience, you know, I've been to a lot of shows, and there really wasn't a lot of filler. It felt like it was just like match after match during commercials. You know, they kept us pumped up. And, you know, this is probably one of the best Raws I've been to.
Excellent. Well, Ben, I appreciate you calling.
Yeah.
I wish we had more time. We got to get to our planned on-site correspondent who's waiting for a call. Yep. So call again if you happen to
– listen on this while...
Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm just going to listen in on this while I drive home.
Cool. Ben, thanks. Good to talk to you.
Been too long. You too, Wade. We'll catch up soon.
Absolutely. Sounds great. All right, cool. So, Rich, I apologize to the other callers on hold. We've gone even longer than usual with our caller segment. We've got to get to our on-site correspondent who is standing by, and we'll get a long-form take on what it was like in the building tonight. We certainly got some nuggets, which can help us with our questions, Rich.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Thanks to our callers. And if you didn't get through and you want to email us, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, Rich, let's take a moment to talk about what you can talk about any of your shows that you're part of, but in particular, the PW Torch livecast that I think everybody should check out, the Deep Dive with Rich Fan. You're live every Saturday, show downloadable at any time on demand. Talk about the concept of the Deep Dive and maybe a couple recent the more recent shows that people might want to pick out to listen to, and what you've got coming up if you've got anything planned.
Sure. Well, the Deep Dive was really the genesis of it came when I was finishing my time doing live casts on Friday with Bruce. Wade approached me about an idea for a show, and I thought about the fact that I overthink and I bring that into pro wrestling, and so I tried to bring that in with you guys. So each week we focus on one subject and we dive as deep as we can in that hour or 90 minutes, whatever comes latest. And typically I'll do it with a guest. Some weeks I'll do it by myself. And in the past, my favorite episode I think I've done so far is the Big Cat Ernie Ladd with my buddy Daniel Palmer, where we talked about his career as an AFL football player, the influence on the civil rights movement as far as his boycott with the AFL in New Orleans, of all places, and then his legacy as a pro wrestler, both in the South, California, and then in the WWE toward the end. And then on the other side of things, we did a couple of silly episodes like Salute to the Marine movies, where my good friend Justin McClellan watched all five Marines, God bless him, and gave his review, and callers called in with their reviews or their thoughts on who played the best villain, who did the best as far as WWE personnel in a movie environment. And I think one of the ones I did last week was a really poignant one as well, where we talked about the idea of movies writ large and how wrestlers get involved in the entertainment industry. And we raised the question with Brandon Carr from Why So Serious Pod, why isn't Dave Bautista, who's in a movie that's probably going to make somewhere around $2 billion, not on WrestleMania's card? And in addition to those shows, I also do interviews. So I've done one with a couple of local indie wrestlers. I've done some with some of the local Torch talent. And of course, I have one coming up where we interviewed the documentarian that created Lady Wrestler, which is a tale of the 50s and 60s, black women professional wrestlers and their story, which kind of ties in a little bit with Moolah, but on the mirror image side where you have to deal with segregation. And, you know, while Moolah and some of the other women who weren't of color were traveling the United States, some of these women were doing the same thing, but then they're hanging out with Sammy Davis Jr. or they're hanging out with any of the other black entertainers of the time because they only could hang out in those groups because of, as I mentioned, segregation. So Saturday, 6 p.m. Eastern, tune in. I welcome any of your comments, calls, criticisms. And then this Saturday, we're going to cover New Japan, in particular the New Japan Cup and where they could go from there.
Good stuff, Rich. Just search PW Torch anywhere you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts or on Beyond Pod or Dogcatcher on Android, wherever it is you listen to podcasts. 7 different shows, all with different hosts and different weekly themes. Pat McNeil's Making the List, Greg Park's Wrestling Night in America, shows dedicated to MMA, NXT, Impact Wrestling, plus our Best of show every Friday. All right, we are back, and we are joined by Chris Ramirez, our on-site correspondent tonight from Dallas, Texas, following Monday Night Raw. Rich Fan, my co-host, still with me from the PW Torch East Coast. Excuse me. Well, yeah, the PW Torch Livecast, Deep Dive Edition, and the PW Torch East Coast Cast VIP version on Wednesday nights. Plus, he joined Sean Radican. I won't even... There's so many jokes I could tell right now, but I won't. He joined Sean Radican for especially New Japan-focused roundtables for VIP members also, many weekends. And Chris, let's focus on tonight's show. We'll go right to the headline, which is the number one trend. Let me see if it still is. Yep, number one trend on Twitter right now in the United States is hashtag Ultimate Deletion.
Are you kidding me?
No. It is the number one trend.
That's incredible.
You attended Raw, and you didn't get to see it.
No.
So how do you feel about that, and how did the rest of the fans seem to feel about it if they were even aware of it?
Yeah, it was super interesting because the Wanda segment happened and we all kind of shrugged our shoulders and went, all right, cool, that's happening. And then when the lights went out, the fans just started chanting delete, delete, delete. I mean, we all knew that it was coming surely because it had been advertised and we were excited about it. I went with some friends that are not wrestling fans. It was the first wrestling show, so I was telling them, "Oh, you know, it's like kind of like The Room, but not really, and it's going to be fun." And sure enough, all of a sudden we look, and Michael Cole and Coach are gone, and Elias gives us this awesome segment. Dare I say, the best segment of the night. He had us in the palm of his hand, and at that moment we realized, I don't think we're going to get the Ultimate Deletion. And my friend looked up the Raw results and said, wait, it's happening right now. So at that point, he and I were pretty upset. I don't think that the people around us noticed. Elias was on it. He was killing it. He was incredible. So he was entertaining the entire arena. And then we got some bronze stuff, brawling with Kane and all that stuff. So, you know, I think people left home happy, but I was personally very upset about not getting the Ultimate Deletion, considering that it was advertised, and I was personally very excited about watching it.
Rich, do you have any questions for Chris?
Chris, I would say my big question for you is, do you feel like seeing Ronda, would you have felt cheated like maybe our last week's correspondents would have when they advertised her all week and they didn't see her, if the exchange was the final deletion or the ultimate deletion, I guess.
Yeah. You know, I wondered that because a question that we had was, why aren't we getting final deletion? And the guess that I had was possibly, you know, we had the Ronda not being advertised and all of a sudden she was being advertised. So I just figured maybe they replaced that segment with Ronda, which is fine. I think the people in Dallas really enjoyed watching her, and my friend's girlfriend, you know, she knows Ronda from UFC, so she got excited seeing Ronda Rousey. But if I'm gonna be honest, the segment was just a little underwhelming. And again, when it happened, the people around me were just like, oh well, that happened. Cool. Let's get to Matt Hardy, and then we didn't get it. So I do think that it had to do with the advertising and of Ronda being there or not being there. I think that definitely had something to do with what we got tonight.
What was the advertising like leading into the show in terms of outside? Well, yeah, just in general, any advertising that you saw, what did they advertise and how was it different than what they delivered?
As far as the advertising, they didn't really get specific with like what dark matches we were going to get. They did give away some dark matches for tomorrow's show. But that I know of, I didn't hear about any advertised matches ahead of time other than what was advertised on Raw last week. Other than that, I don't think that we were promised anything else.
Interesting. Okay. Yep. And so how did the dark match end?
It ended with it started off with Elias, and then Braun came out, and then they had about a 10-minute match. And then immediately after that, Kane came in, and then they brawled for another 10, and it ended with Kane going through a table and Braun celebrating. That was basically it.
Did Braun pin Elias?
Yes, he did.
Okay.
He did. That was an actual match, yeah. Then Kane and Braun just brawled.
Got it. Yep. Okay, well, I've got to ask you about the Roman Reigns segment at the top of the show. Let's go there.
Yeah.
What kind of crowd response did Roman get when he walked through the crowd? And what I'm curious about, and I don't know if you noticed or not, but there didn't seem to be any reaction to him, and I don't know where he came from. The camera showed him, and I would think the crowd would have been distracted by him because he had to walk through the crowd, presumably. So I'm kind of curious how that was in the building.
Yeah, he definitely came in through the audience. Who was in there? It was Kurt, right? Kurt was in the ring. And then we heard a commotion through the audience, and it was kind of hard to see. And by the time that I saw where Roman was, he was already in front of the camera. So he definitely came in from the audience, and it started off as boos, which is really interesting. It was pretty much, I'd say, 60-40 boos. As the segment went on, by God, it flipped. And I looked at my friends and I went, wow, Dallas is really pro Roman right now. And I don't know if it came across on TV, but a pretty nice Roman chant started, at some point. And I said, well, good for them. I guess they're succeeding in what they want. And the crowd really ate up what Roman was saying and his anti-establishment, you know, getting arrested and all that, the Stone Cold-esque storyline really works to their benefit.
Rich, go ahead with the follow-up.
Sure. I would say my follow-up to that would be when it came to Roman, when he – you couldn't hear the commentary, so I don't know how fair it is to ask this question, but did you get the feeling that Roman was being perceived as the victim when the U.S. Marshals were trying to arrest him, even after he started throwing bows? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, once the U.S. Marshals came out, which, by the way, my non-wrestling fans thought that was hilarious.
I'm not sure that's what they're going for, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, once the U.S. Marshals came out, it was kind of like, you could sense the crowd starting to turn, and then once he started to beat up the marshals, then that's when he almost fully turned the crowd towards him, I would say, and then it even escalated more so when he started fighting Brock, I would say, as well.
All right. So,
and what about when he got tossed? I'm sorry. Wait.
No. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask, when he got Braun Strowman'd in the gurney by Brock, how was that? Because we heard on television, at least I heard on television, it was like a pretty big cheer. Uh-huh. And I was actually worried about Roman because his left foot looked like it caught on the top of the dasher board and kind of bent.
Oh. I didn't catch that, but you are definitely correct in that the further Brock went with the attacks, the more the audience started to have fun with the fact that he was getting beat up. It was very interesting. It was like they were so pro Roman, but then once he started getting beat up, it was, you know, you can't not cheer Brock Lesnar just being a monster. It just became fun to watch. So when he came out and he pushed him over, it was definite cheers. It became so entertaining at that point. that we were just having a good time with it.
I'm wondering if the music that Roman comes out to works against his cause in prompting the explosion of boos, you know, da-da, and then it's just like, guys are just Pavlovian. They've just got a boo really loud. And if that actually has been working against him based on what you're saying in terms of kind of the crowd response tonight.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I never thought about his music affecting the audience, but you're right. The start of the song, there's something about it that gives a guttural reaction to it that just makes you want to boo the man.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you look at the other two members of The Shield, when their music changed, even Seth's third evolution of his song now to the mm-hmm. Burn It Down at the beginning, it's very high tempo, very in your screaming almost.
Yes. Yeah.
Whereas Roman is almost like a dirge.
Yeah, yeah. That's...
I think we're onto something.
So change Roman's music and all of Vince's problems are solved.
There we go. Vince, you should have done that 3 years ago. Come on.
Did you, when Roman was being told, or after Roman was handcuffed, on television we could hear Roman start telling the marshals how to do their jobs. Like, you don't touch me, stand back, I'll be fine, you know, I'll go with you. And we had a caller in the first segment say he came across kind of like a dick to the cops, like they're doing their job, and now he starts telling them how to do it. Did you pick up on that in the live audience? Could you hear what he was saying, or was it all body language?
Yeah, I could not hear a thing that they were saying. I was also in the nosebleeds in the far back. I got last-minute tickets.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they to me, from my point of view, it just looked like they were reading him his rights, and it looked to me like he was for the most part, going with it. And then I'm not remembering now when he turned. Oh, they grabbed him, right? They grabbed him. And then that picked him off, and then he went for it.
Got it. Okay. Well, let's talk about another segment here, the John Cena segment. I'm fascinated by this, because to me it sounded like the crowd at first, and please don't let what I interpret change what you interpreted, because that's why we have you on. But watching on television and listening, I thought the crowd at first thought Cena was going a little far, being a little mean, heelish towards Taker. And then they really got into John Cena when he said, but, you know, you kind of owe the fans a response. I mean, don't go hide. And so they got into chanting, you know, do something, say something, whatever it was. And they sort of seemed on his side at that point. Assess to me what, and you're in a good spot in the nosebleeds. What is your sense of how the crowd reacted to Cena, and did it change as the segment evolved?
Yeah, honestly, to me, it felt like... The Dallas crowd was, for the most part, pro Cena, but booing him because that's what you do. And we were having a good time with it, with the John Cena sucks, et cetera. But to me, it felt like that arena was with him the entire time. And I heard people all night talking about how much they wanted to see The Undertaker. So I think that they were so pro Cena because they wanted an answer from The Undertaker. So he was saying in the beginning of the segment, I believe, he was saying, you know, like, you're lazy, you're broken down, it's not true. And I got the sense that, because I remember they were booing that, and I think it felt to me that they were booing the idea that he's lazy and not booing John Cena the man. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Rich, go ahead, Chris. Sorry.
Well, I just think that they just really wanted the Undertaker to answer, and they were gonna boo the idea that he was broken down and retired, with the hope that he would do something about it. So to me, it felt like that Cena had us the entire time.
Now, when Kane came out, was that sort of like when Brock came out? Like, hey, we just cheer because we want to see, you know, monsters, you know, wrestlers toss each other around? Or how did the crowd react to when Kane was the answer to Cena's challenge, essentially?
It was a nice little surprise. I don't think anybody expected to see Kane. So when his music hit, it was kind of exciting to see where the segment was going and what Kane was going to do and how Kane was related to the story that they're doing. And then when he chokeslammed him again, it was very, very much like the Braun Strowman, like, oh, we get to see this guy destroy. This is fun. To me, it felt like a treat because it was such a surprise. Nobody expected to see Kane be involved in that segment.
Rich, do you have any other questions for Chris?
No, I think the big ones were we asked, and I think he did a really good job describing the on-hand account.
Let me ask you, as far as the other non kind of marquee anchor segments, there was Asuka, there was Finn Balor and Miz and what they did. What else kind of stands out to you about those segments for being in the building?
I had an interesting experience again because I was with some non-wrestling fans with me, and to me, what really stood out was how they were reacting to certain wrestlers. And the second that Asuka's mask came up on that screen and the lights dimmed, both of them went, "Whoa, this is cool. She's cool," and they immediately gravitated towards her. So I thought that was interesting, just that Asuka can get that reaction from non-wrestling fans. As far as the Finn Balor and the club segment, unfortunately, the crowd at that point was really fatigued. Gosh, those commercial breaks, they just kill you. There's just a lot of commercials, a lot of downtime. And I mean, I'm a big guy on pace, how to pace a show, how to pace a scene. And watching the show, I'm like, gosh, the pace of the show is all over the place. You know, they were going along for the ride, and then they dim the lights and they show commercials for 10 minutes. And then, you know, and then we get tired and we get fatigued. So by the time this Finn Balor came out, there was a point where I went outside to go to the restroom. I said, "Jesus, is there anybody out there?" It was silent. I don't know how it came across TV, but it was dead silent during that match, which is so unfortunate because those guys are so good. And the cruiserweights, they were in the dark segment, and my non-wrestling fans also leached onto them as well. They were so wowed by their athletic ability and the style of match that they were doing, you know, Kalisto and TJ Perkins and all them. But they really leached on to them and said that they were a highlight for them. So to me, that those are my takeaways, again, from the seat that I had of watching the show and watching these non-wrestling fans react to it, is Asuka comes across as a star. The cruiserweights are really entertaining to non-fans. And the transitions in between segments and those commercials really, really affect the live audience.
Did you get there in time to see what happened before Raw went on the air?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so tell us about that.
It was, there was two dark matches. It was Heath Slater versus, a losing streak, Curt Hawkins. And Curt Hawkins lost, of course. And then right after that, we had a Cruiserweight six-man tag. And it was TJ Perkins. And this is where people always blank on names.
Yeah, they do.
Aria Daivari. Yeah, Tony Nese, and then Kalisto, and then Grand Metalik and Lince Dorado. Yeah, Dorado.
You did very well.
Thank you. I said, people always forget the cruiserweight names, and I'll be damned if I don't know them. Well, I forgot them, but thankfully my friend is right next to me, and he helped me out.
See, that's teamwork right there.
That's great.
That's right.
who was most over tonight? Rank them, if you can. You know, who is the top
team? Yeah. I would definitely say Brock. I think Brock got the biggest reaction tonight. And then I would say Cena and Roman were tied, and then Braun a close third.
Who's a close third?
Braun.
You said Braun was, Brock. Oh, yeah, gotcha.
Brock, sorry. Brock. Yeah, Brock was first,
yep.
Cena, Roman second, and then Braun Strowman as a close third. People love throwing their arms up in the air and yelling.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And I assume Kane got a big pop too, but kind of a different kind of like, oh, that's a surprise.
Who now?
Kane.
Oh, yeah. It was a nice reaction, but I wouldn't say that it was on the caliber of those three.
And
it's a shame that you didn't get the Elias segment. Again, honestly, it was the best part of the show. It really was.
Wow.
He had us in the palm of his hand. There was he kept, everything's dark and there's a spotlight. And he kept getting up from that chair. And every time he would get up, everybody would cheer because he wasn't going to sing. And then he would sit down and they would boo. And he played that for a solid 5 minutes so brilliantly. At one point, he stepped out of the spotlight and then let a little finger into the light and they booed. And then a hand and they booed louder. And an arm, even louder, until he sat down and just was flooded with loud noise and booze and you sucked. It was fantastic. It was so much fun. And I was watching it, and I thought, gosh, this guy has so much potential. And he is so good at what he does, and he's so entertaining. And I'm excited to see where he goes.
How long was Ronda Rousey in front of the crowd?
Oh, 4-5 minutes.
And tell me a little bit more about what she did during that time and how you would compare the crowd reception for her, as we're talking about the biggest pops of the night, the crowd reception for her compared to others. And I'll complicate or add to the layer to the question. Did you see the 8-minute Ronda Rousey video, and how did the crowd respond during that, if you saw it?
Oh, I didn't realize that the Ronda Rousey video was on TV. Yeah, so she did her entrance, and the reaction was good. It wasn't stellar. It wasn't anything special. I think people were just excited to see her. She just grabbed the mic, said a few words, and then Dana Brooke came out, and everyone around me was confused. We were confused. The segment just felt like it was all over the place. We were like, why is Ronda here? What is she gonna say? Why the heck is Dana Brooke here? What is she planning? She's telling her to leave the ring, but does she plan on doing something? What's going on? And then Ronda, did a wrestling move on her. And I don't know if you caught this on TV, but it looked like Dana Brooke had a really nasty fall. She also landed right on top of the microphone, which looked nasty. And then Ronda left. And then we got that video. And, it was just a video. People watched it attentively. Like, they just paid attention and watched it. There wasn't any commotion or anything. It's around that time that people were chanting delete because they were waiting for the ultimate deletion.
Would you say that the reaction to Ronda made you would make Vince more confident or less confident that he spent his money wisely?
If I were them, I wouldn't worry. It was still a positive, response. It wasn't a mega response, but again, I'm just going to give them the benefit of the doubt. It was, it was the end of the third hour, and yeah. everybody was tired, and Ronda, she just didn't do much. It felt to me like, oh well, we kind of had to squeeze Ronda in, so we're just going to give her this really quick segment, so she's on Raw, and we can get her in front of the audience. That's what it felt like to me.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, anything else you want to add from your on-site experience in Dallas tonight before we let you go?
It was a good time. It was a great time. It was a good time. As far as, like, sometimes you guys talk about T-shirts. I didn't really see a lot of T-shirts. A lot of the shirts that I saw were just WrestleMania shirts or, like, I was there shirts. So you get to know particular wrestlers really over in Dallas, Texas. They just like the product. but I think that's about it. It was a full house. It was 90-95% full. It really was.
Yeah, Cole touted at the very top of the show, 16,122 or something like that. Just like, it's a sold out packed house. So if it's not sold out, they don't say it's sold out. They'll use euphemisms or not address it. So you knew this was going to be a big turnout. Well, my final question for you is how many non-wrestling fans did you go with, and why did they go if they're non-wrestling fans? You twist their arm, or were they curious? What was the circumstance?
Yeah, well, it was two of them were my college buddies, and they were theater majors with me, and they're just thinking, how is this theater major such a huge wrestling fan? That's lowbrow entertainment. And I said, guys, it's so theatrical. You don't understand. It's just another form of acting and performing art. I wrote my senior thesis on it, for Pete's sake. And so they said, well, Chris, we really want to go to a wrestling show with you one day. And when we were in college, they watched WrestleMania 29. They had a blast. So they said, we want to do this in person one day. So I found out that I didn't have rehearsal today. And I said, hey, you know, tickets are $25. Do you guys want to go with me? And they said, absolutely. So they came in, they took it in for the first time, and they had a blast. They had so much fun, and they did not expect a lot of the advertisements. That was the thing that that took them aback. They at one point they were playing like a Jetsons WrestleMania commercial, and my friend said, "Is this real?" He's like, "Surely this isn't real." And I'm like, "Oh yeah, they're a money making machine." But they had a great time. They had a great time, and I'm glad they came, and I'm glad that we got to experience that together.
Will they go again, or was this sort of like a novelty? But yeah, that's good enough.
I don't think they'd come again. Yeah. I don't think they'd come again. I think that it was kind of a checklist. They checked it out, and I think they were glad that they were there. But I don't think that they would come again. Unless now, if it was like an NXT show, I would really try to convince them to go, because I think that's more of the wrestling experience that they kind of wanted. At one point, my friend said, "Oh, I guess I thought the audience was going to be a lot more electric and alive than they are." Yeah. And I think that an NXT show is more so what they would look for. I think that that kind of environment and that rowdy crowd would be better fit for them.
I've been to some flat NXT house shows. I've never been to a flat ROH live event. So you kind of got to pick your spots, but something like ROH too, it might even be more along the lines of what you're describing, with a crowd that just buys into the brand and they're into all the characters, and it's just, it's a testosterone fest with a lot of women too, but I mean,
right.
You know, that intensity, and NXT can be hit or miss, and our correspondents indicate the same, but I totally know what you're saying. Certainly an NXT takeover experience, where it's all about the wrestling and the culmination of feuds, is such a different experience than a televised event where the audience are props. You know, I mean, they make money off the show in terms of tickets, and they want you to be happy and come back, but you're props for a much larger audience on television, you know.
You saying that actually reminded me of one thing that my friend said. He said before he left, because he had to leave a little early, he said, "You know, I don't feel like this show was made for the live audience."
Ah,
I said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "Well, I mean, I'm here and I'm watching it, but I feel like I might be getting a better show watching it in my living room." Because of all the downtime, which I thought that was so interesting that he caught on that in his first go around, was that he didn't feel that the focus was to please the live audience, that it was that we were just there to watch the production, almost like you're watching them film Friends. You're there to be the laugh track, but it's not for you. It's for the television version that you're going to get 6 weeks from now.
Chris, great job tonight. Thanks. Appreciate your contributions to the show.
Thanks, man. It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Let us know if you go next time.
Sure will. Thanks.
Excellent.
Bye.
All right. We are back for the mailbag segment of the program. So many emails. Rich, I don't know where to begin, but I'm going to start with the one, the subject line, Roman is a felon.
Oh, there we go.
Brian B. says, so let me get this straight. Roman Reigns assaults U.S. Marshals, and Brock Lesnar is the bad guy? Well, yeah, I mean, come on. He attacked him while he was in a stretcher, you know, or on a gurney. But yeah, I get your point. Reigns should go to jail for years. This completely insults my intelligence. I cannot believe that they believe this is the way to get the fans to like him. Lesnar was the hero here. The crowd was right. He deserved it. I'm done with Reigns for good now. Not that I was ever on board to begin with. I hope the rest of the show is better and the Ultimate Deletion will be great. Take care, Wade and guest. No one has Rich. yes. So I'm going to read just a few Reigns emails just to kind of, and then we can kind of react to them. Ray from Wisconsin. Wade, have you noticed the WWE announced team have completely ignored the main event from WrestleMania 2015 while at the same time expecting us to remember Rock, Triple H, Ronda, Steph segments from the middle of the show? Just another reason why throwing Reigns out there before he was ready was a mistake. This year's match could have a whole another level if it was the first time Lesnar and Reigns were doing battle for the title. Interesting point. Then we have Eric S. going, hey, Wade, so Roman just resisted arrest by assaulting three federal officers. Since he won the fist fight, does this mean he's no longer under arrest? Shouldn't they have shot him? And then I love this follow-up. Shouldn't they have shot him? go VIP. Eric asks, he says, I looked it up, and U.S. Marshals apparently carry two guns at a time. Interesting. Let's see. Well, oh, I could go on. I mean, I got a lot of emails about Roman, but I mean, the gist of it certainly seems to be that people felt kind of insulted by this. WWE, it's pro wrestling, historically, it's very difficult to break away from the rules within the I hate that WWE stole the term universe, you know, because like that's sort of a more of a generic small U term that's used for narrative. But But I think they've taken their universe, and when they go outside of it, like with police officers, like one thing for security guards, but you know, because they're like, well, they're hired hands, and if they get beat up, you know, it's part of the risk of the job. But U.S. marshals or police officers, it's like when you go there, you are distracted in a way that's not that I don't think serves their purpose. You know what I mean? Like I think they should. If when you bring outsiders in like that, and you. What or emailers are saying, you break the law, you know, he's a felon, he attacked U.S. marshals, it does take you out of the moment and distracts from everything else that WWE is trying to tell in terms of their story.
I think they're going a step further than they need to with this, because if I can imagine someone listening right now screaming at both of us saying, hey, what about if I look on the WWE network and the number of times Austin got arrested, thrown in the back of the cop car, and by the end of Raw, he's somehow stolen that same cop car with no explanation and he's gotten back to screw over Vince McMahon. I think the difference is when he was Mr. McMahon as the owner in the middle of the ring being a jerk, he was getting comeuppance. Right now, Roman is essentially bullying three levels of bosses to get his way in a situation where he's completely in the wrong, and there's no redeeming quality in that. Steve Austin was the everyman beer-drinking guy who you'd want to sit down during a game and talk to. Roman right now is the guy in the suite asking those people to shut up and so he can enjoy the ambiance of his suite.
Yes, well put. No, I mean, there's so many ways, and that's one of the better ways I've heard, to describe what it is about Roman that just doesn't come across the way that Vince McMahon thinks he is or should be coming across. There's not a sense of humor to Roman. You know, like Steve Austin, people were with him and they would give some latitude to what he did because he was so incredibly likable. And there just is something about Roman, and it's, and I don't think it's how he is in real life. I don't know how he is in real life. I've heard good and bad about him in real life, just, you know, little anecdotes here and there. Mm-hmm. But mostly good. You know, he's a cool, chill dude, like nice to be around. Seems to put being a father ahead of higher on his list than some other wrestlers who are more about, you know, hooking up with the locals and that kind of thing. I mean, so, you know, there's really good things about Roman that you hear, but on television you get a different version of him, and it does feel like Roman is he's out to prove how freaking cool he is every time he's on TV in case his college football buddies are watching. Like, he gives that vibe off, and Austin did. Austin was I'm all in, and there was a sense of humor about him, and if he talked back to a cop, people instantly thought cop did something wrong. And they should, you know, and they deserve what they have coming. And with Roman, I don't think it came across that way at all. Not to me, not to you, and certainly not to the people emailing us.
Yeah, and I just think of Roman right now in this quandary of be yourself, but also don't be too much of yourself that people hate you. And that's a really tough place to be as a character. And I think it goes back to everything that they've done. I mean, it sounds so stupid, but to me, if you're fighting with U.S. Marshals and you have a flak jacket on to begin with, it's jarring to me logically to say, okay, this guy is cool. He's not only going to beat up these U.S. Marshals, but he's going to take 57 German suplexes from Brock, get up, you know, wink at somebody in the crowd and off he goes. Like, that's not – you have to give me something more than that. And you also can't give him the cartoonish beatdown because we know he's going to be okay next week.
Right, exactly. All right, shifting gears, Jeff G. from Canada. Hey, Wade, I love the post-show podcasts and the shows from you and the Torch. There's been a lot of talk about whether John Cena will face the Dead Man Undertaker or the American Badass version. It appeared the Dead Man retired at last year's WrestleMania, but he was on Raw 25 in character. Would that signify Cena will face the Dead Man, or could WWE just ignore that appearance? Should they go the American Badass route? I liked what I thought was the send-off they gave the Dead Man character last year. Also, you wondered last week what was up with Ronda Rousey. I agree they shouldn't advertise her, not deliver. But if she's training and making mainstream media appearances to promote WrestleMania, then promote that. They had a good video package tonight. Perhaps show Triple H and Stephanie preparing as well if they aren't going to appear on the show. Thanks very much. I'm happy to be a VIP member and look forward to all the WrestleMania content in addition to the great content all year long. Jeff G from Canada. Thank you, Jeff. Really appreciate that. If people who want to go VIP or just find out more about it, I invite you to go to pwtorch.com/goVIP. That will just run down everything that comes with VIP membership. 30-plus years of archives, thousands and thousands of hours of podcasts and old radio shows dating all the way back to the late or early 1990s, actually. And new VIP shows every single day, all compatible with podcast feeds on iPhone and Android. New newsletter each week, ad-free versions of this show, and all four shows I do during the week, plus the live casts are all ad-free and plug-free. So a lot comes with VIP membership. If you're there's no better time to check out what we do. And you can also check out our WrestleMania special section and read my reviews of every WrestleMania since WrestleMania 4 or 5. I think it's the first one that's on online. And roundtable reviews for the vast majority of WrestleManias. We did some look-back roundtables from WrestleManias 1 through the middle years, and then we just have done them after WrestleMania ever since 2005. So just tons of WrestleMania content written and podcasts that you might want to check out. Rich, so he brought up two topics, Ronda Rousey in terms of how they handled things, and he mentioned Triple H and Stephanie in a training video. I really want there to be a training video with Hunter and Steph. And in my mind, I know how I'd want it to come across, which is Stephanie putting up a brave front where it almost looks like she's talked herself into thinking that she can beat Ronda, like a delusional, sweaty, kind of like, you know, how she unintentionally comes across sometimes in these workout video, you know, the Stephanie workout DVD and photo spreads, like, yeah. She's taking herself too seriously and she starts buying her own princess greatness, you know, that she was born into, and starts thinking like, well, God, I'm a McMahon and I got Triple H by my side. Like, I want fans, and I think a video like that, a training video like that with Hunter, like, Hunter could take a couple different approaches, but it wouldn't be bad if Hunter reacted a little bit in the background, like he's like, oh, crap, she's buying yeah. her own press. Just a little bit, not in a cartoonish over-the-top way, but if you pay attention, you can kind of see he's getting a little worried that she's starting to get full of herself and think she might have a chance. But I want fans to want to see Ronda choke her out. And I think a video like that could do it. And I think it's a huge lost opportunity if they don't do something with Steph and Hunter. But again, I think it has to be serious and not you know, Mean Gene and Hulk Hogan drinking raw eggs together. Like, I think you want to have people really think Stephanie's taking herself too seriously.
I really want it to be something akin to, and it doesn't have to be like this one for one, but I was listening to Robbie E's new podcast and he was talking about the story of Eric Bischoff finding out that, hey, I want to put Ernest Miller on Nitro because he's my kid's karate instructor. I need Triple H to hire somewhere in Greenwich a quote unquote black belt in judo that Stephanie can throw around. And then he slowly realizes that the guy or gal is not as well trained as he thought they were.
Mm-hmm.
And she hasn't realized it, to your point, like where she's like, I'm getting really good at this judo thing. This is like my third lesson and I'm throwing this guy around. He's like, yeah, that's great. And he's like furiously looking through a phone book. That's so antiquated. he's furiously like Googling like good judoka or good jujitsu teachers. And panicking that she's like, I got out of 3 arm bars today. Ronda's not ready for me. They talk about who's not ready for Asuka, but she's not ready for me. And
yeah
just making it more and more ridiculous. And if they, you know, I'm not one for putting children on television, but like if one of their kids happened to like off camera say, hey, mommy, what do you think about Ronda Rousey's training video with Mr. Angle? And she's like, oh, don't worry about it. Mama's going to show this woman what for. I'm going to show her the McMahon way. And she has her chains and she's doing her sit-ups. And it's just more and more like if anyone's ever seen The Great White Hope, where the guy's been training the entire movie and then he goes in and Damon Wayans knocks him out with one punch. And it's like, wow.
Well, okay. Good stuff. No, I hope we get it. And we've got, you know, a couple more weeks for it to happen. Let's talk about the Cena situation. Did tonight, where were you coming in tonight? And did anything you saw tonight change your impression of whether we should see or will see the American Badass Biker Taker or the return of the dead man who people assumed retired, but Undertaker never declared it, as Cena pointed out tonight, by the way? You know, hey, you know, just say you're retired. People respect that, but at least answer us.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they're playing it really good. I would love it to be declared one way or the other, just so I can kind of have those thoughts allayed in my head. But to me, honestly, the longer they play it out, the more likely it is you're going to have that anticipation for The Undertaker more so than the match. And the more they can keep that illusion going, the less we notice, oh God, The Undertaker's going to be in a match again. Because this time last year, that was really the big discussion. Does he really need to be in another match? Does he need to be in this match with Roman? And it's just so weird to me to see The Undertaker. If he comes out, like I joked with my friends, I saw him as an old black man when he was the American Biker Taker, because he was talking with this southern drawl. Like, I know he's Texan, but he's like, your hands too low, got to keep your hands up. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what? Where did this come from? You've been talking in monosyllabic monster tone for 20 years, and now all of a sudden you're like, you know,
yes,
Mark Jackson from like Southern Tulsa. Like, what the heck, man? And so I really want to see it. And Shahid, who's a frequent contributor to the East Coast cast, mentioned, I don't want to see it unless, you know, he's dragging Hulk Hogan around on the back of his bike like he did back in the 2000s. And I was like, well, that may be, given what's going on with Moolah, you don't want to put Hulkster out there right now. I mean, as much as I would love to see him drugged by a bike, that's not necessarily what we need on WWE television.
Yeah, I agree with that. All right, up next, David Miller, who called, said, thanks for taking my call tonight. He said, one thing I wanted to mention last night, and this has been bugging me for a few weeks, is when exactly did Mickie James turn heel? The Monday before the Elimination Chamber, Alexa Bliss is trying to sweet-talk her into joining forces at the pay-per-view, but Mickie made it clear she didn't trust her. The two never interacted at all at the chamber because Mickie was eliminated before Alexa left her pod. The next night on Raw, the two walked to the ring as best friends forever. Did I miss something there? Thanks for your time, Wade. No, you didn't. I thought that jumped out to me too, like the way that Mickie was just nodding along with Alexa, like she's her sidekick, and I mean, she was basically the Alexa tourage, the Bliss tourage. I don't know, just nodding along like Bo and Curtis do. Rich,
I think you guys are incorrect. You missed the riveting segment in which they had a delightful come to Jesus moment where they realized they were best friends and needed to depend on each other. I'm lying, of course, that none of that happened. It's also weird because I know you've been saying this with Bruce, but the weirdest thing about this whole situation to me is with all of the weight stuff, and I really like the way Nia Jax got back at them and kind of got to stand up for herself. I feel like it's also a step further that Mickie's kind of having flashbacks, because each week she's wearing more and more revealing outfits.
Yes, yes.
And she's more and more showing that she's like I joked with my friends today, the problematic friend who has the problematic aunt that comes over and it's like, oh, hey, it's Aunt, you know, Mickie, and she's going to go swim in the pool while we're playing video games and no one's playing video games anymore. And Nick Aldis frequents this show, so I'm going to stop there because I like living. But yeah, I think that was really interesting that that's going on and that she's now Muttley to all of Alexa's like evil plans, yeah, to the point where she was her stunt woman to save, sacrificed her own body. It wasn't just being a sycophant. She actually sacrificed herself to get Alexa out of the building while she was beaten up by Nia.
Okay, let's stay in the women's division here. Jason Phelan of Cleveland, Ohio. Is it just me, or is every female on Raw cast horribly incorrectly? Sasha is being a bigger person, with Bayley being petty and childish. It should be the other way around. Alexa being a bully, while Nia is wanting revenge, should be the other way around. Mickie James as mean girl sidekick instead of true babyface. Paige isn't cleared, but she should be more than an insignificant third piece of Absolution. I'm just hoping a reset button is hit after WrestleMania. What are your thoughts? Rich, you can take it in any order you want, but I certainly want to include your thoughts on Bayley and Sasha and what we saw tonight, where my conclusion and my Raw report on PWTorch.com during the show was, I don't like either of them. I think they should both turn heel now.
Yeah, I think she's being a bit of a baby. the fact that she thought the best reason to betray her friend in tag matches is, and that one time we were competing against each other, you were happy you won. That's really dumb. That's really dumb. And and to me, when you go a step further, the whole impetus of her coming down this track was she claimed she was the toughest woman on the roster, and she lost a hardcore match to Alexa Bliss where she wouldn't use the bat once. After, with my own two eyes, I had seen her on the Edge and Christian Pod of Awesomeness on the WWE Network whoop the tar out of Tommy Dreamer in the face and groin region with a barbed wire bat. Like, you can't give me those two images and then expect me to think that, oh, well, she just didn't have that killer instinct. It's like, you just had a show where she proved she had killer instinct.
Yeah.
And now now it's even worse because that same defect, I guess, manifested herself with one of her best friends because she couldn't accept that you have to hurt people sometimes to wrestle, which I thought she understood at this point.
Bailey made the point, you know, Sasha, it's not what you did, it's how you reacted to what you did. And I was like, okay, good point. And I'm like, this is where Sasha's revealed as the heel, and we just move forward. But no, then they got interrupted before they kind of had their ultimate resolution, or you know, once some good points were made, we didn't get a resolution. Paige interrupted. She apologized, which was nice of her. Because, you know,
she's British. She's polite.
Yes. And then in the match, Bailey refuses. It doesn't reach out for a tag when Sasha needed her. And you're thinking, well, you know, she's just proving Sasha's point. You know, I mean, you can be mad at Sasha's demeanor and not trust her, but you signed up for this match, or you got assigned to the match, however you want to portray it. You're in it. You should be in it to win it, be the better person, and tag. And so I think they're both damaged goods. And Rich, do you have a sense of where this will end up? And do you think it could go either direction still? And who would you most like to see actually turn heel at this point?
I would most like to see Sasha turn heel, but I think it's going to turn out that Bailey, because she's mentioned it several times in interviews, she wants to try the heel thing if that gets her back on track. I think Bailey's just going to go to SmackDown and they'll just say, figure it out over there. To be honest, I don't know what she's going to do one way or the other, but I think after WrestleMania, just throw her on there. Let Becky Lynch show her how to be a face again.
Yeah.
Unless they snatch Becky and bring her over to Raw, which she's well deserved, but I'm feeling like there's going to be a lot of people on that side of the roster anyway. So the sooner they can get the two of them, sadly, it's just like Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. The sooner you can separate those two people, despite the chemistry and match quality they can have against each other, the better it'll be for each of their careers.
Absolutely. All right, Rich, we got some more email questions. Can you stick around just for a few more minutes for a little VIP mailbag session?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so let's do that, because I got to get this show off to the producer, and we got to get this uploaded on a timely basis. So we'll do that, send that over, and then for VIP members, we'll have a session added on to the end of it on the ad-free, plug-free VIP version where we answer some more emails. We've got the Mark Henry Hall of Fame, and we've got more Roman Reigns emails, which I'll read. They're kind of fun. And we also have Braun Strowman and his mystery partner and what's next for Bray Wyatt and some more Ultimate Deletion talk. Rich, thanks so much. Always great having you on the show, and we'll just talk to you on the other side here.
All right. Pleasure as always, Wade.
So tomorrow, same place, same time. Join us for the post-SmackDown show. Cameron Hawkins joining me for the post-SmackDown show. Should have a lot to talk about as we get closer and closer to WrestleMania. I'm very curious what Daniel Bryan has to say and what the follow-up is on the Shane McMahon, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn storyline, plus how will they do with the Shinsuke Nakamura hype? And will they address AJ Styles missing all the house shows this weekend? Being announced as injured after an injury, what appeared to be an injury angle at MSG on Friday night. Missing the house shows the next few nights, including opposite of Monday Night Raw tonight. We've got results up of weekend house shows over at pwtorch.com. If you attend a live event, we rely on you to help keep us and everybody who reads pwtorch.com and listens to this show up to date on what's happening at live events. So if you attend a WWE live event, non-televised or televised, but especially the non-televised weekend events, you can send results to pwtorch at pwtorch.com. Don't need to work it out ahead of time or wait for an invite or confirmation. If we get two reports, we'll put up two reports. If we get three, we'll put up three. We like to get different perspectives on the same shows when possible, but sometimes we don't get reports on shows at all. So if you do attend a WWE live event, or for that matter, ROH, or any other live wrestling event, send us results, pwtorch at pwtorch.com. If you're not really sure what format to use and you want to look at how others do it and how we edit them and present them, just check out the results section at pwtorch.com. I encourage you to check out our report on the MSG show from Friday night and the other house shows from the weekend. And just check out pwtorch.com every day. We just put up on Monday afternoon a 20 years ago Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter cover story. This predates us even having a website. And it was about the Monday Night War really heating up with a monster 4.4 rating, a lot going on with Steve Austin and Mike Tyson and Vince McMahon on WWF Raw, and then on WCW Nitro, a lot going on with Hulk Hogan and the NWO. Fascinating snapshot of 20 years ago this week. Just about, well, most days, we put up some sort of flashback from 5, 10, 15, or 20 years ago, and there are articles you just won't find anywhere else. Besides that, news updates, live coverage of TV shows, including Zach Hadorn making his debut on pwtorch.com for this week's Raw, covering Raw live, just like I do, with an alternate perspective report. So there's just, frankly, try to keep up on a three-hour-plus show in real time and then going immediately to a live podcast. There's on occasion, believe it or not, some things that I might miss or some things I can't expand on. Zach now is providing an alternate perspective in addition to my very long, detailed report on Raw. You can flip back and forth between his take on things and the details that he picks up on and my take on things and what I pick up on the same website. So pwtorch.com now featuring two live Raw reports on Mondays. So many reasons to go to pwtorch.com every day. If you haven't checked it out, be sure to create a home screen button on your smartphone so you're one tap away. And VIP members get an ad-free version of the website also, both desktop and mobile. If you're not a VIP member and you've been intrigued about it but haven't made the move to actually become a VIP member, rates are as low as $8.25 per month on average. You can pay $9.99 a month or subscribe for a year and bring that average down to $8.25. And there's just a ton for your money. Not only new content every day, but 30 plus years of archives, an unmatched insider library of information, real-time contemporary coverage of all of pro wrestling's biggest events since the late 1980s. My reports on WrestleManias and SummerSlams and all WWE, ECW, WCW, TNA pay-per-views. So much to check out. And a fascinating march through history. You can see what we were saying about things as they were happening and listen also. So the place to go to get more information is pwtorch.com/govip. Our VIP members testify all the time about what a great value it is and how great it feels to be part of the group of fans who want to kind of get past the filler and the nonsense and the race to be first and the kind of the fanboy reaction, pro, raw, or hate, and to get their wrestling news and analysis from a trusted, experienced team with analysts who know the history of this business and understand what makes it tick, and a journalistic approach that's detached from compromise and being co-opted. It's a really great place to be for pro wrestling fans. I'm really proud of what we built with PW Torch VIP, and we invite you, if you like this show, to give it a try. Or come on back if for some reason you were with us and left. It's pwtorch.com/govip. All right, that'll do it for me for today. Until tomorrow with Cameron Hawkins, and then over at Podcast One, the Thursday flagship, will feature Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net this week. And then late in the week on Interview Friday, Sam Roberts. You might know him from the WWE kickoff shows or the Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast or his Sirius XM radio show. He is joining me for part two of our discussion of rearranging WrestleMania main events. We last Friday, check it out if you haven't yet. It's on our blue logo, our blue feed. Just search Wade Keller wherever you listen to Pro Wrestling Podcasts and subscribe for free to the Podcast One shows that I do on Thursday and Friday. And Sam joined me and we reviewed WrestleMania's 1 through 14 and discussed if there were any other matches on those shows that could have closed out the show, that could have been the main event instead of what they ended the shows with. I think we'll have a lot more. Oh, we did 1 through 17, actually. And the second half of the WrestleManias, I think we're going to have a lot more debate, a lot more to talk about. And Sam and I plan to have that conversation later this week and present it to you Friday. But catch up on part one if you missed it, last Friday's show. Also, I had Robbie Eat, formerly of Impact Wrestling, with me as a second guest on our doubleheader of Interview Friday, talking about his departure from Impact Wrestling, his new podcast, his future, his aspirations, and a little reflection on his time in Impact Wrestling. So subscribe to both the Red Brand and the Blue Brand. The red logo is for the post shows of Raw and SmackDown, and the blue logo is for the Podcast One shows, the Thursday flagship and Interview Friday. And again, VIP members get all those shows on one single feed, or you can break them down by show and by host and by theme as a VIP member, and they're offered to you ad-free and plug-free, along with a ton of VIP exclusive podcasts, several per day. So check it out, pwtorch.com/govip. Thanks, everybody. Until next time, Wade Keller, signing off.